The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on July 14, 1987 in Copenhagen, Denmark. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 11, Text 4.
Manyase yadita chakra maya drashtum iti prabho yogeshwara tato me twang darsayatmanam abhyaya. If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystic power, then kindly show me that unlimited universal self. Translation, repetition. If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystic power, then kindly show me that unlimited universal self. Purport. It is said that one can neither see, hear, understand, nor perceive the Supreme Lord Krishna by the material senses. But if one is engaged in loving transcendental service to the Lord from the beginning, then one can see the Lord by revelation. Every living entity is only a spiritual spark. Therefore, it is not possible to see or to understand the Supreme Lord. Arjuna, as a devotee, does not depend upon his speculative strength. Rather, he admits his limitations as a living entity and acknowledges Krishna's inestimable position. Arjuna could understand that for a living entity it is not possible to understand the unlimited infinite. If the infinite reveals himself, then it is possible to understand the nature of the infinite. By the grace of the infinite. The word Yogeshwara is also very significant here because the Lord has inconceivable power. If he likes, he can reveal himself by his grace, although he is unlimited. Therefore, Arjuna pleads for the inconceivable grace of Krishna. He does not give Krishna orders. Krishna is not obliged to reveal himself unless one surrenders fully in Krishna consciousness and engages in devotional service. Thus, it is not possible for persons who depend on the strength of their mental speculations to see Krishna. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to text 4, chapter 11 of the Bhagavad Gita as it is in the matter of the universal form. The word manyase yadi, if you think, is important because it demonstrates the attitude of Arjuna in requesting Krishna. That if you think that I am able to see your universal form, sometimes the devotees, they generally don't ask Krishna anything. Rather, they offer Krishna their service. That's the nature of devotion, to serve Krishna. It's Krishna who he spontaneously thinks how to reciprocate with his devotee, how to offer his devotee service. But the devotee doesn't want to accept any service from Krishna. But sometimes, for some reason, the devotee may feel that some need to ask Krishna something. But the devotee then asks in this way, if you think, manyase yadi. If you think, like sometimes we would pray that say some devotee is sick, we would pray to Krishna that if you're pleased, to kindly allow this devotee to become healthy and remain, because we require the association of that devotee. And if you think that, if you are pleased, and you'd kindly have your blessing. Because if Krishna wants to take someone, who can stop him? So the devotee sometimes asks like this. That was the way Prabhupada would pray to Krishna. If you think, or if you like. So Arjuna, he's not asking Krishna for some kind of sense gratification, that I'd like to see your cosmic form. You know, it'd be really gratifying to me. He's asking because he can understand that when Krishna has declared that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the future someone may say, well, he just says that, it doesn't mean it, it's true. Like in India today, there's a lot of so-called incarnations of Godhead. They claim that they are actually Krishna. But if you were to go to them and say, kindly sir, please show me your universal form, you'd get booted out immediately. What are you doing? You're being insolent. But Prabhupada, he said that actually if someone claims that he's God, he should be able to prove it. If somebody shows at the airport and said, I'm the president of Norway, or president of England, or whatever, there's no president of England, but president of France. Of course, everyone knows who the president is, but they would say, well, kindly show it. If someone claims to be the Lord of the whole world, then he should be able to demonstrate that. Otherwise, you don't claim it. So Arjuna knows that, well, I believe you. And Arjuna believed Krishna, but maybe in the future others wouldn't. They'd say, well, Krishna's not God. He's saying that, but he's not the Supreme Lord. So then Arjuna is requesting, as he said in the previous verses, O lotus-eyed one, I have heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity and have realized your inexhaustible glories. O greatest of all personalities, O Supreme Form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see you, how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. So, basically, the purpose is actually to, not that he doesn't believe, but that others might not believe. The Prabhupada said that Arjuna did not have any personal desire for confirmation. Krishna also understands that Arjuna wants to see the universal form to set a criterion. For in the future there would be so many imposters who would pose themselves as incarnations of God. The people therefore should be careful. One who claims to be Krishna should be prepared to show his universal form to confirm his claim to the people. It is like, for some time this Bhagavan Rajneesh, he was claiming to be God. But then later he said, there is no God. So where's the question of being God? There's no God. And then he went on, I don't know exactly, but he kept changing. So there was some other guru some time ago, 5-10 years ago. He was claiming to also be Krishna. But then he got married to his secretary, who was, Danish or American or some, I don't remember what national, maybe it was American girl. So he got married to his secretary, some Western girl. And so then his mother said that he's no longer God. His younger brother now is God. But then his younger brother didn't have the charisma. People weren't following him. He couldn't deceive the people well enough. So then in spite of having married a Western secretary, still some people were following the other older brother. So then the mother said, well, now he's God now. It's transferred back. People are believing these things. It's amazing. I don't know what they think about. But then there's another famous yogi, or he's got some big hair like this, and he also claims to be God. He shows some magical tricks. And once there was one magician, Sirkar, a very famous magician, this Sirkar Jr. in India. So he said, "I'd like to meet you." So he wrote back, "No, I don't see magicians." Why, if he's incarnation of Godhead, why he won't see a magician? Because he always is giving people ashes on their head, and then he's also just making rasgullas and apples and watches just come from the air, and he's giving to people. So I said, "Why is this?" I mean, if he's genuinely producing these things from the air, then there's no fear if a magician comes. So why he's refusing? So he said, he determined, "I'm going to go and see him." So he just went without revealing his identity, that so-called incarnation. You know, he all of a sudden he said, "Here, you take this." So then that magician, he went like this. He said, "Here, you take a rasgulla, you know." So that incarnation, you know, "What's going on?" "You take this, you know. Here's an apple. You take it. Here's an orange, you know." He says, "Who are you, you know?" He says, "I'm Sirkar the Great, whatever, you know. Listen, I claim to I'm a magician, but what you're doing is simply ordinary magic. But you're claiming you're God. That's why you're a cheater. Ah, get out of here," you know. So throws him out. So these things like are going on. In India, it's a regular pastime that somebody claims to be God. In the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had that one yogi who also had big hair, had some mystic power through worshipping Kali or something, some demigoddess. He got some mystic power in his hair. He could also do some magical feats. Recently, just about 20 years ago, when I just came to India about 15 years ago, there was one yogi, and he also had some big hair, but big beard. He had a little temple by the side of the Mahanadi River in Orissa, which is about 200 kilometers from Jagannath Puri. So he would sit inside his temple, and there people would come and give him offerings. And he'd close the door of the temple, and he'd open the door again as a servant, and he'd be gone. He's gone. Boom, they close the door. Then after about 1 hour, they'd open the door again. Boom, there he'd be back with big piles of hot prasadam. He said, from Jagannath Puri. Even in Jagannath Puri, you can hardly get hot prasadam. But he had the hot prasadam. He said, by his mystic power, he was going to Jagannath Puri and bringing it back. Then they would distribute that, and people would give him donations, and he was doing some Ras Leela or something. So somehow some husbands were complaining that this person is playing with our wives and so many difficulties are coming. So they sent the police to investigate, the special intelligence branch. So they're studying, what is this going on? So they found that by the riverside, about 200-300 meters from that temple, there's some smoke coming from the ground. So it's very unusual. So then they made a raid. One time when they closed the door, the police came, broke the door open, and they found in that temple there was a secret trap entrance. And they went in it, and there was a tunnel. And in the tunnel, they followed, and there they found there was an underground kitchen. And there this yogi was there with his cooks, and he's getting the offerings and to bring it over to the temple. So then they showed all the people, "Just see how he's cheating you." So then the people, they took the yogi, and one by one they pulled out all the hairs of his beard and him. Meanwhile, the police were writing out the complaint. They just kept ignoring, you know. And it's like a daily affair. I mean, even today, there's so many so-called avatars that Krishna says, "Yada yadahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam adharmasya tiratmakam sijamiham paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sangstar panartaya sang bhavami juge juge," that I'll come yuge yuge, age to age, in every millennium. But actually in India, not only are the incarnations coming, you see, every age, but every century, or every decade, or every year, but every month, every week, there's new avatars coming. You see, but they're not the real avatars, they're bogus. This is the funny thing. If people are religious, so they exploit their sentiment. They're not satisfied to say that the Guru is representative of Krishna. They have to say, Guru is Krishna. He is Krishna. He's incarnation. He's actually God. He's not getting the power from Krishna, but he is Krishna. There's a one famous story about one incarnation. He claimed to be the reincarnation of Lord Chaitanya. So, but then he was found in a barn with some girl, and the parents beat him really bad for messing around, and then they just completely beat him. And so he was so afraid that he went and hid inside a cave for many years. And he was inside the cave out of fear, because if he goes out, he might get beaten up again. Then after some time, his followers come there, and they find that he looks very sick. So they bring a doctor, and the doctor says, you've been without any sunlight for so long that your health is really bad. So you need to get some air. They told his follower, you take him on a bullock cart, it's like a cart, let him go around and get some air, he'll get cured. So then they were carrying him around on this cart. Then he fell off the cart, broke his leg, and died. So followers felt cheated. Our avatar, our incarnation, is dead. So they made another plot. They put him in the grave for burying. Then out of the grave, they came up with a little baby, a little boy about 3 years old. Said, look at, he immediately reincarnated, just like that. This is a new avatar. But then after a day or two of showing that this is him, came back again like this, then the parents came and said, why do you kidnap our child? We don't agree to all this. It's every, you can't believe how the people are going on. But just like the Prabhupada said, Krishna could understand how in the Kali Yuga people are going to try to push forward this idea, I'm incarnation of Godhead. Everyone wants to be worshipped as God. All these false religious people. So basically, the Vaishnavas, they're trying to establish who is God. Who is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Now you can understand why Lord Chaitanya, although he is Krishna, because he's coming as a devotee of Krishna, he never proclaimed that he was Krishna. Although everyone will proclaim that they're already doing it. But in Lord Chaitanya's Maha Prakash Leela, when the 21-hour arti was performed, that another time also, Lord Chaitanya showed his total spiritual opulences. In fact, one time also Lord Chaitanya revealed his universal form in the house of Srivas Thakur. But although Lord Chaitanya never proclaimed that he was Krishna to the public, and although all the scriptures say Krishna will come but in the form of a devotee, for his intimate followers who kept realizing that he was Krishna, on two occasions he revealed his spiritual opulences. He did not publicize that. He's actually Krishna, but in Kali Yuga, Krishna only comes in disguise. So for his followers, he could reveal, but to the public, he did not reveal. And during his presence, nobody could claim that he was Krishna. Only after he left did he allow. He said, after I leave, you can reveal who I am. During my presence, I don't want anyone to speak that I'm Krishna. It'll disturb my pastimes. Krishna varnam tvisha krishnang sangopangastra parshadam yangai sankirtana praya yajanti hi sumedasaha. Krishna will come glorifying Krishna in a non-blackish color, in the color of a golden color, accompanied by his own expansion, Sango, Nityananda, by Dvaita, Gadadhar, Srivas, by his incarnation, by his energies and associates, by his paraphernalia. What will he come to do? See, the Shastra, there is a way of telling who is an avatar. Because, first of all, avatar will be predicted that this incarnation of Godhead will come. He will have these qualities. Even in one of the Vedic literatures, it predicts that Krishna will come, Sachi Garbhe, in the womb of Sachi. He'll come in the first 24 years of his life, he'll be a grihastha, last 24 he'll be a sannyas. He'll come and spread the Sankirtan movement. He'll come and chant his glories. All these various descriptions are given. So if you study these, you can see the Lord Chaitanya, he fulfills. The actual bogus incarnation, there's no quotation or any prediction. They're just claiming like that. So naturally, they create a disturbance in society. If somebody does claim that I am God, then he should be able to show his universal form. Arjuna asked, please, if you think it's possible for me to behold, kindly show me your universal form. So if somebody's claiming like that, it means he must accept that, oh, you're such an intimate devotee, I'm revealing to you who I am. I'm actually God. Oh, thank you very much if you kindly would be so kind to show me your universal form. That should be the criterion. If you can't show your universal form, then don't claim to be God. When Krishna was present, he also showed his universal form to another universal form, to Duryodhana, when he tried to kidnap him. Still, they were so foolish, they could not get any proper intelligence not to fight the Kurukshetra battle. So Lord Chaitanya, actually, he's come to establish the proper Sanatana Dharma or eternal religious principles to give people real love for Krishna. Says, when Krishna comes, one of his qualities is he'll do something which no one else can do. To actually make people love Krishna, that is their greatest miracle. One time Lord Chaitanya was chanting at Ramkeli. Ramkeli is where Rupa and Sanatan lived. Rupa and Sanatan lived 3 to 4 kilometers from the capital of the Hussein Shah. The Hussein Shah was the emperor of the entire eastern India, known as the Bangladesh, which is comprised now of Bengal, Bihar, and many other states in eastern India. And Rupa and Sanatan were his finance and prime minister, and they were Vaishnavas. So at their place, Lord Chaitanya, he started a big Harinam. At that Harinam, so many hundreds and thousands of people started to come. Probably 10,000s of people started to come. It was a very big Harinam. And Lord Chaitanya, day and night, he just kept the kirtan going. It was going and going. He would just himself be always there with the kirtan. So one of the ministers in the Hussein Shah, some of the Hindu ministers, but the Hussein Shah was a Muslim who was known for breaking down Krishna temples and things. So they thought, this is dangerous that Lord Chaitanya goes on chanting like there's so many crowds of people are coming. What if the emperor, that Shah, what if he does some violence to Lord Chaitanya? Better to tell him to go out of here. So then they made a plan to go and tell Lord Chaitanya that he should move his kirtan far away from the palace of the emperor, the Mohammedan emperor. So then one minister, messenger, he went to tell Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya, I mean, from morning to night he was doing kirtan. He would just break for a second, go in, take a quick bath, take some prasad, again out and do kirtan. And there was no any moment that you could actually speak to him. So he's waiting for 2 days like this, trying to get a chance when he could speak to Lord Chaitanya, but he wasn't getting any opportunity. Everyone can understand? So then finally he said, well, there's no hope speaking to Lord Chaitanya. So he started to tell other associates, you know, you're very close to the emperor's palace. He could come and do some violence to you. You should be very careful this day. So then suddenly, you know, gradually the devotees started getting worried for Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, he saw in the kirtan, like the devotees are, you know, getting a little bit kind of distracted in their kirtan. So then suddenly he stopped the kirtan. Do you think I don't know that I'm right next to the palace of the emperor of Bengal? You think I'm not aware of that? Why are you all worrying? No one can stop the Samai Sankirtan movement. Don't worry, just go on chanting. So then everyone, oh, Hari, well, then they went on with the kirtan. So that minister went back frustrated. So meanwhile, next day the emperor, he just suddenly said that, who is, because he obviously got some reports of it. He said, who is this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So then one of his Hindu ministers said, wow, what, he's just some like a fakir, they call this, like a mendicant. He doesn't have any money or any following. He just, you know, goes here and there and a few people follow him. It's not very significant. try to really downplay it so that maybe, you know, the emperor wouldn't, you know, take it very seriously. The emperor said, no, I don't accept. I don't accept. I think that he's not different from God. He's not different from Koda, Hafiz, Allah. Everyone was shocked. How is the Mohammedan ruler saying that a Hindu sannyasi is not different from Allah? I said, what makes you think that, Your Majesty? He said that, well, why do you work for me? Why do my governors work for me? How is this whole government running? It's all running because I'm paying everyone. If they didn't get their salary, if they didn't get remuneration, if they didn't get some kind of money, some kind of material thing, who would work for me? I don't even think my wife would stay with me if I didn't give her material things. If this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even my minister, even so many big people, they are chasing after him. People are giving up everything and following him, chanting this Hare Krishna mantra, not taking any salary, not taking anything from him, material, yet they are fully satisfied. No one can do that unless they are God. Who in this world, you can't satisfy anyone without money. They're satisfied and there's no money. It must be spiritual. Some of the acharyas, they consider, who is this one, Mohammedan emperor, who has recognized that Lord Chaitanya is God? He's not obviously an ordinary person. But Lord Chaitanya, after some time, he moved on, went back to Jagannath Puri. His purpose for going to Ramkeli was fulfilled. He met Rupa and Sanatan, gave them the order to go to Vrindavan, to meet him, to join him. So like this, Lord Chaitanya, his purpose is actually to give people love for Krishna. But that is the greatest miracle. People would say, why is it sometimes Srila Prabhupada that sometimes people leave? He said, that's not unusual. Because there are so many material attractions everywhere. What's a miracle? How is anyone staying? How anyone is satisfied just chanting Hare Krishna and living a simple life? Why are they satisfied? And if you lose your absorption, if you become distracted, if you commit some offense, in some way you can become entangled again in illusion. But the fact that anyone can be happy without anything material, that's a miracle. It's possible because of this holy name, chanting of Krishna, he's Krishna himself. It is possible by following Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. Actually, Srila Prabhupada did so many miracles in making temples and publishing so many books, and you could give so many, but the actual greatest thing is that he was able to produce devotees, and devotees are being produced by devotees, and this way, that's the actual real miracle. Advaita Gosai, he could see Navadvip 500 years ago. It was very materialistic. It was very hard to preach there. It was impossible to preach, practically speaking. No one wanted to hear anything. They all knew everything. They're all very proud. And people were very religious superficially, but it was all materialistic religion. Simply praying to different forms of God to give them some material benediction. There was no pure devotion. Pure devotion was practically few. Rare Vaishnavas were there. 99% everyone was in a Mayavad or in Karmakand, in some materialistic form of so-called superficial religion, Chola Dharma, Apo Dharma. In fact, people though were very proud of their religiosity, so they would show off what they were doing. So when they would marry their daughters, they would have big ceremonies to marry their daughters off, spend a lot of money to show, look at, I'm religious. But it was all just giving it for their family. And then, well, people run out of daughters, and they still wanted, it was a very enjoyable thing to have big marriage ceremonies. You could give big feasts to everyone. So they started doing is they would have marriage ceremonies for Shiva and Parvati deities. Make a deity or a doll of Shiva and Parvati, marry them. That wasn't enough. It's another competition. Someone took a male and female dog and married them. big Vedic ceremony, change the garland, you know, the fire yagya, the whole thing. And someone, he did, well, I'm not going to, he had married a female and male cat. This way is going on, you know. And then Advaita Goswami said, what's, you know, this, what is going on in the name of religion? What's this to do with religion? Simply a farce. But the people are thinking this, and they're showing I'm very religious, and they're marrying a cat by a Vedic ceremony. Nothing to do with the Vedas. It's a totally, it's a mutation. That's why they pray to Krishna that you please come down, because you can give love for yourself. That's Krishna's special feature. He can give his own love. Normally he doesn't give it so freely. As Krishna, he would give it very sparingly. He'd easily give liberation, he'd give mystic power, he'd give material benediction. But to get love of Krishna from Krishna was a very rare benediction. When Krishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he freely gave out this love of Krishna. Papi tapi jato chilo hodina uddharilo tarsakhi jagai madaire. He came to give out prema, pure love for Krishna. That is something which in history has not happened previously in any known history, in this day of Brahma. So we are all very fortunate, you're all very fortunate to be present while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is here on this world. If you chant Hare Krishna, follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can achieve. You can taste, even now, you can get a taste for love for Krishna. That's your greatest good fortune. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any questions? Before, the Dorabeshes dancing, or Sufis dancing, were much later. And that came after Lord Chaitanya's movement. Because actually, in India, there's no such ceremony of dancing and chanting. People would sit down and do sitting kirtan. It's not the custom of just the general Hindus to do chanting and dancing. Chanting and dancing was actually brought by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's no history of that before. Lord Chaitanya, Tukaram, the disciple of Lord Chaitanya, they made this chanting and dancing established in India. Big groups of people singing and dancing and chanting. When the Mohammedans, they said to people that you had a choice of dying or converting to Islam, they're not the most liberal of people. So some people, some sadhus, so just to save their self, they became superficially Muslim. But actually they preached the same thing. They were like offshoots of Lord Chaitanya's movement. There wasn't Sufi, all this happened much later after Lord Chaitanya's movement. Then, after this chanting became very popular, then some, this I've heard many historians say, that it was the Hindu sannyasis who became the Sufis or the Darabeshas, and they started this, this type of Muslim offshoot. It's a kind of a combination between Hindu and Muslim. It's not a, in Islam, it says specifically you shouldn't play any instruments when you're doing namaz or namask, or shouldn't do singing and dance. It's definitely an influence of India. It doesn't exist in Arabia or Persia or any of these areas. Only when you start coming over eastern Iran, Pakistan, and northern India, that when it started to mix the Islamic and the Vedic Hindu cultures, that time, the Vedic culture and Islamic, there was a few mixes. That's when it started. Lord Chaitanya is not influenced by them. And his style of chanting is also totally unique. Use of the clay drums. This is an imitation of fiberglass. But the clay drums, the kartals. It's not imitating anyone else. It's an original. No one else ever did that before. As such, exactly in that form. Wooden drums, sitting down they would do, but his drums, everything, it was a unique contribution. Also, I went to Iran, and they're dancing. There's some Sufis there now, of course, but their dancing is totally different. It's not a very spontaneous type of dancing. It's a very forced thing. They get into it, but it's completely different. But they join our kirtans in Iran before they became very heavy. They're very receptive, Sufis, amongst Muslims. Any other question? I can't say that I don't know what they get out of it or don't get out of it. I haven't studied their group, what facilities they give their followers. I know they have the big mass marriages and they have factories and they have jobs and things like that. I don't know much about them. That was the Hussein Shah's opinion. Of course, he had a big, Rupa was his finance minister, joined him. He was the big minister of the government. He became a sannyasi, giving up everything and just preaching Lord Chaitanya's movement. We don't accept that that alone is, that might apply to any representative of Lord Chaitanya or any representative of God. But Hussein Shah could realize that Hussein Shah, whether he says someone's God or not, doesn't really make much difference. I mean, the Vedas say Krishna, Chaitanya is Krishna. That's what we accepted, whether the Hussein Shah said it or not. The fact that in his own logic he could understand that he was a divine person shows that even though he was a Mohammedan ruler, he had something on the ball. He was pretty intelligent. But even if someone else, if someone is dedicatedly working and they're actually not getting any material remuneration, they're simply working for spiritual motives, well, that would be a sign that such people are representing Krishna or God in some form. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was saying that Christian missionaries, they all get salaries. So he said, this is not going to be able to distribute love for Godhead if all of the preachers are simply working for salary. You don't pay them a salary, they don't work. Then it's a material. Should be some higher motivation than just getting a salary. So I don't know how what other groups work. Of course, I can say even we give allowances to the married couples. But basically they just take what they need to live a simple life. They actually could get more doing other things outside. They voluntarily accept a austere way of life, simple way of life in order to propagate and practice Krishna consciousness. That would be a first criterion. But as far as whether a group is bona fide or whether we wouldn't just end it there. Even something might be religious, still doesn't mean a person's an avatar. You have to see whether he has a prediction in the scriptures, whether he has those type of qualities. If you understand how the Mohammedans would, even Hussein Shah, he would go and break down the Krishna temples and attack always the king of Orissa, the Pratap Rudra. He was a ferocious kind of, he wasn't just like a docile person, he was a ferocious Mohammedan ruler at that time. But he gave an order actually, nobody should interfere with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan. I forgot to mention that. He actually gave an order that nobody should interfere with Lord Chaitanya's movement. That's, historically, that's quite an unusual. There's no parallel to that. This more has historical value rather than any specific spiritual evidence. Because whether the United Nations declares someone to be an avatar or not, doesn't really make any difference what to speak of any head of state, whether he's an emperor or a king or a prime minister. That's their opinion. It's not absolute. But the fact that even such an important person, emperor, in fact a Mohammedan, had that historically is interesting to see that how great an influence Lord Chaitanya had and the time that he was in on different persons. Rather than as some kind of, that's like the thing we quote, that this proves that Lord Chaitanya is incarnation of Krishna. We quote the Vedas. Vedas are the authority for that. People were afraid that Lord Chaitanya obviously knew the mind of the Hussein Shah. The fact that he knew his mind, that's something which is extraordinary. There's some sannyasis in India say the Buddha mentioned the Bhagavatam, appeared under the Bodh Gaya, achieved a Bodh tree in Gaya. And at the same place, this other Buddha achieved his realization right after that. I don't know the authority of all those. In the Bhagavatam, elaborate study on prayaschitya, atonement. How does a person get purified for doing evil things or bad things to others, doing bad karmas? Even you put someone in jail, even they know that what they did was wrong, still, when they get let out, they go out and do the same thing again. So then what's the value of atonement? There's a very interesting discussion between Sukadev and Parikshit, where Sukadev was testing Parikshit. So basically the point is that simply by performing pious activities, it doesn't take away the desire to act in bad karma or sinfully. Similarly, just punishment alone doesn't take away even that desire in some people. Even they directly suffer, get put in prison, get punished, still they go out and do the same thing. They think that next time I won't get caught or something. They can't control their senses. The point is that Lord Chaitanya is actually changing the heart of people. That after getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, they won't do these things again. That tendency will be controlled. Jagai and Madai, after they were really horrible people. Before they were delivered, once they were delivered, they were perfect Vaishnavas. They didn't break their vow to Lord Chaitanya. They followed very strictly. So somebody gets a taste for Krishna consciousness, if they develop that love for Krishna by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, automatically they get all good qualities, and the desire to do bad or materialistic things is gradually eradicated from the heart. Janayadhyasu bairagyam gyanami dahitukam. Spontaneously, knowledge and renunciation appear in the heart. Ahitukam. There's no material cause for that. So this is all part of the bhakti principles. The Lord Chaitanya is giving bhakti. So there is a change of heart. By chanting, a person experiences a change of heart. Their attitudes, their outlook changes. So that's different than just setting some criminals free. You set criminals free, but they go on doing crimes. But that's why Lord Chaitanya, he was strict with his followers that if you take a vow to act in a particular way, you should stick by it. So he was strict with Haridas, Junior Haridas, Choto Haridas. But generally, there are a few examples of people falling into some kind of maya, but generally that tendency was, except for a few careless examples, actually the tendency has changed. That's what's unique, because in the material world, the governments, they're frustrated. They don't know how to rehabilitate criminals. The criminals remain criminals. No matter how many times they put them back in prison, again, there's some hardcore criminals. There's nothing they can do to change them. Two-time losers, three-time losers. Again and again, they get put in prison. But actually, Lord Chaitanya movement changes the heart. It's actually a revolutionary process. It's a revolution in the consciousness and the sinful life of the people. Janaraga viplavo. Some qualities spontaneously come, but at the same time one can practice. Just as we follow sadhana bhakti, perfecting is if one directly can always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. But if one's not able to do that, then we practice sadhana bhakti, the practice, regulative practice of devotional service, where we practice remembering Krishna, practice serving Krishna. So similarly, we should, pure devotee may spontaneously exhibit Vaishnava etiquette, but we don't wait for that stage, while we're progressing on the way back to home, back to Godhead. We try to assimilate what is the proper etiquette? How does one act and interrelate with the Vaishnavas? It says one cannot develop love for Krishna if one doesn't know the proper Vaishnava etiquette. You'll commit offenses, and if you commit offenses, how you develop love for Krishna?